thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Java with Josh. I'm your host, legislator Josh Lafazan. Today we have a really exciting show with Suffolk County Sheriff Errol Toulon joining us. As we say every week, having big dreams is common, but figuring out how to achieve those dreams is rare. On this show, we interview some truly incredible people to share their journeys to success and give you the tools to reach your dreams. So grab your cup of Java and let's go. Sheriff Toulon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, legislator. How are you today?
I'm doing well, and it's a real treat to have you here. And for our listeners who are meeting you for the first time, on January 1st, 2018, Errol D. Toulon Jr., EDD, Dr. Toulon, became Suffolk County, New York's 67th sheriff and the county's first African-American to be elected to non-judicial countywide office. As Suffolk's highest-ranking law enforcement official, he is working to serve and protect the county's 1.5 million residents through innovative programs to reduce crime and recidivism, and by implementing sound fiscal policies. And I'll tell you, full disclosure, we had met at an event at the Chinese consulate in Manhattan, hosted by former Congressman Israel, complete stranger to me. And you have quickly, in a matter of time, become not only a mentor and a role model for me, but somebody I consider a big brother. So I'm so grateful to have you in my life. And I'll tell you, our audience listeners will really, really love your story. So I want to get us started and ask, what does a sheriff do?
You know, that's a great question. I've been asked that many times since I've taken office. And so, you know, as you said earlier, the sheriff is the chief law enforcement executive in Suffolk County. But with that, I oversee a staff of approximately 1,300 employees, about 900 on the correction side, because we have the two jails in Riverhead and Yaphank. And then also about 250 deputy sheriffs that not only patrol some of the roadways on the East End. We do the pistol licensing for those that live in the five eastern towns of Suffolk County. We do evictions, civil litigations or civil enforcement. And so it's a very comprehensive office and it's very busy. And a lot of people don't realize that the sheriff's office has been in existence since 1683. And so it's one of the longest standing law enforcement organizations on Long Island.
16. I did not know. You see, we learn something new every day here on Java with Josh. That is incredible. And I want to talk a little bit, because this show is not about politics, but I love having politicians on here. Your race for sheriff was really crazy in terms of how compact of a schedule it was. Because if I have this correct, you didn't announce that you were running until way late in the race.
That's correct. I was the Deputy Commissioner of Operations with the New York City Department of Correction, where I worked for 25 years. And I left there January of 2017. And I actually didn't enter the race for sheriff until September 15th of 2017. So I had approximately 53 days to campaign and get my message out.
And if you put that into perspective, 53 days, 1.5 million residents, but you are somebody who has the tenacity to just make every day count and get it done. I do want to ask, so we're going to get into, you have an accomplished career in public safety and criminal justice. You have an accomplished career in academia. Why run for Suffolk County Sheriff? You know, why put yourself through a grueling campaign?
You know, I thought it was a job I was very qualified for. I thought it was a job that I can definitely do. And, you know, for the last 15 years, I really wanted to lead a law enforcement organization. It was truly something I wanted to do. And I'm lucky because, you know, being a sheriff, I'm elected by the people and I only have to answer to the people. You know, it wasn't, you know, being a deputy commissioner on Rikers Island, not only did I answer to the commissioner, but of course, City Hall, which I had many disagreements with. But being an independent elected official, I can make the decisions that are best based for the members and the staff working for my office and for our community at large.
And you know, I want to backtrack a little bit, you know, because, you know, running for sheriff, you know, obviously this was not your first rodeo. You know, you have such a distinguished career in law enforcement and criminal justice. Can you take us back and talk about some of your former work? Because I think it's really wonderful how experienced you are, where you were not coming into this job, fresh. You were coming into this job knowing really how to get the job done. And I think it's why you've been so effective.
No, thank you. You know, I started in 1982 as a New York City correction officer and retired as a correction captain in 2004 due to some illnesses. I followed my father's footsteps, who was a warden on Rikers Island. I then went on to work with County Executive Bologna after I completed my MBA and my doctorate as the Assistant Deputy County Executive for Public Safety in Suffolk County. And it gave me a great understanding of the landscape here in Suffolk County and also what the constituents' issues were in various communities. I then returned back to New York City as the Deputy Commissioner of Operations, and I had a host of responsibilities that I feel really prepared me for this job. So I had our applicant investigation unit vetting 10,000 candidates for 3,000, you know, we hired about 3,000 new correction officers a year. Our training academy, training executive leadership, pre-promotional, in-service, and also recruit training, our compliance division, our gang division, our intelligence unit, our engineering or our audit unit, you know, our environmental health and our nutritional services, providing, you know, almost 25,000 meals a day to staff and inmates. And so, you know, we had a $1.5 billion budget with about 12,000 employees. And at one point when I was a young captain on Rikers Island, we had 25,000 inmates on Rikers Island. So, you know, I should say not on Rikers Island, but in the New York City system. And so I'm very in tune with what goes on, you know, not only in law enforcement, but specifically jails.
And what I think is so unique about your story is not only do you have, you know, this accomplished career in law enforcement, but for those of us who really, you know, adore you and know your background, you know, you have an MBA, you have a doctorate degree, you have a certificate from Harvard, this overall rich academic career. Why has higher education been so important to you?
Well, I think it comes from my parents. I watched my mom and dad both go as adult learners back to school. Mm-hmm. My mom achieving her baccalaureate degree and my father achieving two master's degrees. And so it's been ingrained in my brother and myself. And, you know, I love school. I have to be honest with you. If I could, if I had the time, I would be in school right now, hopefully trying to obtain some degree. But, you know, right now I don't have that time, but it's something I'm passionate about. And I really try to encourage our staff who are interested to go back to school and you know, create some sort of mentorship for them.
Well, you know, full disclosure, I'm at the University of Pennsylvania right now pursuing my doctorate, and you were actually the person, I will say, my mom was the person who was inspired by your story and said, Josh, I want you to go pursue this degree. And so it was a combination of you and mom. So I thank you for pushing me to go back to school and hopefully I'll soon have my EDD. I want to switch gears because I was fortunate enough to come, you know, visit you at your office. And there was a picture with a phrase that really struck me. And you always are talking about this phrase on the picture that you want to get to the kids before they get to you. Can you expound on that philosophy and you know, your philosophy on criminal justice and policing? Because it was the first time I saw something like that. And the fact that not only is it the theme that you base yourself on as the highest ranking law enforcement officer, but the fact that it's displayed so prominently in the sheriff's office, I think that's really profound.
You know, that thought process was that if we can get to the kids in the classroom and in the playground and community centers and address their needs and concerns there, is more important for us, especially as a law enforcement community, than rather try to help them once they're in these four walls, because then they're already part of the system. They're awaiting trial because they don't have bail or there's a bail that they can't meet. And so our goal is to really be as community oriented as possible in as many schools. When I first took office, I was in 1 to 2 schools per week talking to students before COVID and, you know, really trying to understand what's going on with our youth. We created a program called Deconstructing the Prison Pipeline. We're looking at adverse childhood effects with various students in our community, especially those that have socioeconomic issues and also high crime areas, and really trying to create as many rehabilitative programs as possible, more towards the individual and not necessarily towards the group, so that we can try and target what's going on in a person's life so that they don't return back to a life of crime. And our communities are safer.
And I'll tell you, I've seen you interact with students. I will tell you, one of the coolest things is I teach a college class at Long Island University. When Sheriff Toulon walked in to my class and knew one of the students who I just met, you knew one of those students from going into the schools. I think it was the perfect moment that encapsulated just how broad of a reach you have had and how differently you approach the job. And it's something I do want to talk about as well is this, you know, the START program, because when I came to visit, I would love to come and visit and hang out, and we do that, but I came to visit this START program that you have launched. Can you talk a little bit about what that program is and why that program is so important to you?
You know, we looked at a triangulation of how we can create a rehabilitative model for not only getting to the kids before they get to us. So that's one part. Second part, of course, is now where they're here, they're incarcerated. How do we help them with rehabilitation? So the START was the third part of that triangulation where now they leave jail. And so what are the services that are in the various communities they're returning back to? And how do we connect? So now the minute someone's incarcerated, we start their reentry on day one. We have correction counselors and community correction officers that are working with the individuals that are incarcerated to complete a packet so that we can understand where they want to be in their life. Now, once they're discharged, the START Resource Center, and START is an acronym for the Sheriff's Transition and Reentry Team, we are able to connect them to the resources that they're returning to, whether it's education, housing, they need healthcare, employment. We're working within this START Resource Center to connect them to those services. We also provide not only a care package of non-perishable foods when they leave, we have hygiene items. They can come back at any time and they can do resume. We have resume building classes. They can job search because we work with the Department of Suffolk County, Department of Labor. We have various counselors coming in to provide counseling for any of the staff, any of the formerly incarcerated individuals. But what we're also doing, if you're returning from state prison, if you're involved with the justice system out of state and now reside in Suffolk County, you can come to us and we're helping so that you don't fall prey and go back into any of that behavior that led you to a life of crime.
And what I found so remarkable is speaking to the staff of this START program and hearing about, just the empathy in their voices. And, to me, what you have done so well and what your team has done is you have changed the focus and the goal to say that we're going to focus on rehabilitation, because if the goal is to make sure that these individuals don't come back inside those four walls, do they have the tools to be self-sustaining on the outside and to transition back into civilian life? And what you said to my students and which still sticks with me is that you have no idea who has been incarcerated in their past. You could be sitting in the movie theater next to somebody, you could be in a restaurant next to somebody. We have no idea. So I just feel like that coupling of the destigmatization with changing the focus, I think is really remarkable. And what I'll say as well is that what Suffolk County does so well under Sheriff Toulon, and this is my personal opinion, we hear politicians up and down the television ads, tough on crime, tough on crime, tough on crime. You can be compassionate and be effective in reducing crime, because if you reduce recidivism, then aren't you reducing crime at the end of the day?
Exactly. And one of the other things that we've partnered with our START Resource Program is the fact that we're partnering with Stony Brook University School of Social Welfare to actually have a family reunification. So Stony Brook has provided graduate students to work with families and incarcerated individuals so that their tension, stress, whatever family needs that a family has while that individual who may be the breadwinner for the family is incarcerated, how can we help them? Because that then becomes a drain on our community and our society if someone cannot meet their financial obligations. So, we're looking to try and make sure that everybody's taken care of. And, one thing that people need to understand is that this isn't soft on crime, as you had mentioned earlier, because if we can do this, we can change people's lives. We have implemented several things in our intelligence unit where we are a little tougher on those individuals that want to continue their criminogenic behavior.
And that's, it's taking a nuanced approach. And I think you're somebody who is sophisticated enough to understand that, things are not black and white. Like you can take a nuanced approach and not everything has to fit in a 30-second soundbite. And it's just something that I continue to emulate is when I hear you speak, not everything can be summarized in a yes or a no question. Some things are yes and or yes but. And there's just so much complexity to the way you think and the way you act. And I just want to say personally, I'm grateful to have a role model who really is as nuanced as you are and is thoughtful approaching the issues. But speaking about thoughtful, I have to ask you this question. COVID-19 has been a nightmare for everyone. How has your role as sheriff been impacted by COVID-19?
You know, I was very fortunate when I was a deputy commissioner back in New York City. I had experience with H1N1 and the Ebola virus. So we actually started planning the last week in February for COVID-19. And we actually, by, I would say, March 9th, 10th or 11th, we closed our jail down. So we've had no, you know, we didn't have any visitors, no service providers. Staff had to wear masks. Their temperatures were being taken. We were able to space our inmates out, thanks to bail reform, but also each inmate was given two masks. They were able to get additional cleaning supplies for their living quarters. And we've only had two positive cases with our inmate population, and only about 3% of our staff, you know, to this date has been infected by the virus. And so, you know, I think that everybody's been very cognizant and realized the gravity of this virus, and we've taken it all very seriously. Everybody's continued to wear masks. And, you know, we've had our female inmates that volunteered for our program. We've made 20,000 masks, so we've been able to issue two washable masks per inmate, and then deliver masks into our community, to grocery stores, healthcare institutions, you know, local businesses, so that we've been able to have a positive impact in our community during this tough time.
I think it's a miraculous feat. The fact that not only have you kept those numbers so low, but you also were able to deliver those masks to the community. And I think what it goes to show you is that when there is a crisis on the horizon, if you are proactive and if you take decisive action today, you can be in a position to weather any storm that comes your way. And does that speak to your leadership style in terms of trying to anticipate, you know, what the worst case scenario can be, looking at around the curve and saying, what could we do now to take care of tomorrow's problems? I'm assuming that's within your leadership style.
That is, but I have to tell you, I'm surrounded by a great group of men and women that are really involved. They're engaged, not just to hold the position, but they're actively talking to our staff. They're talking to our inmates. They're talking to leaders in specific areas to see how we can do things better. And so I'm the leader of the organization. I have to tip my cap to the men and women at work and inside the Suffolk County Sheriff's Office, because, you know, whether they're deputy sheriff or correction officer, all the way up to chief or warden, they're all doing such a fantastic job, and I could not be prouder of them.
And it's really special in terms of, you know, meeting so many of your staff members and to see how much they revere you, you know, as somebody that, you know, they look up to and admire, is really wonderful. And it brings me to my next question, because when you run for public office, you are in the spotlight, whether you like it or not. But something that is unique about your role is that you become a role model for so many young people that you speak to. Can you talk about, you know, what does being a role model mean to you? I'm assuming, you know, throughout the various roles that you've had, you've made speaking to children a priority, and in Suffolk County, to see how many children you've been able to speak to, how many different Boys and Girls Clubs and groups you've been able to frequent. You know, what does being a role model mean to you?
You know, I think that, you know, for me, when I talk to young men and women, it's the fact that we're going to fail. You know, wherever we're going to wind up, there were a lot of failures along the way. There was a lot of heartbreak, there was a lot of disappointments, and maybe we didn't get to our goals as quickly as we may have wanted to. Or even there became a time where our direction had to be turned and we had to go a different way. But I think the persistence that we have to have, you know, I'm a two-time cancer survivor. I tragically lost my wife after 29 years of marriage, have had many ups and downs. I was forced to resign from the New York City Department of Correction because I had some serious battles with Mayor de Blasio and his administration. I would not relinquish or do what they wanted me to do. I tried to do what I felt was right for the men and women in the New York City Department of Correction. And, you know, I've experienced a lot of frustration, and but I didn't give up, and I had faith in myself. I knew I always was trying to do the right thing, and I knew I could do the right thing. And luckily, through God's grace, I'm here and able to make, hopefully, a positive impact with a lot of people that I encounter. And my role as sheriff is not, I don't limit when individuals have problems, is that I'm the sheriff and this is all I can do. I try to work with anyone and direct them to the right people. To help. If it's a pothole, you know, I'll refer them to you. but, you know, it's, you know, something on a local level that's just not necessarily my responsibilities. I try to help them, you know, with the particular problems. I feel that's my role as a elected official.
I love it. And something I do want to talk about is that, you know, there have been a number of thought leaders in the country who said at some point in everyone's life, you should have both a mentor and a mentee. I think it's been really neat for me. You know, I consider you, you know, a mentor and a role model. And to me, to see my young interns, to see me become that presence in their life has been really rewarding. You know, obviously along the way, you've had, you know, a ton of help getting to where you were from those you've worked with. You know, who are some people, you know, who have really made a difference in your life, you know, professionally and personally?
You know, one was, of course, the top one is my dad. You know, he's the one that, you know, I would always go to no matter good times or bad times. And as difficult as the conversations may have been, I've always been able to speak to my father, which I'm very lucky, even at this age in my life, I still am able to do that. But there have been several mentors throughout my time in New York City Corrections, especially when I was a young supervisor. People that have helped me, because I had a very difficult role. I was in emergency service, and with 25,000 inmates, we had guns being snuck into our jails. We had escapes, hostage situations, riots, disturbances, and really understanding how to handle that. And also keep your staff motivated, but keep them from doing the right thing and not being overly aggressive, you know, during certain situations. And even to this day, I have two people that are mentors. One is a male, one is a female. African-American female, Caucasian male. I meet with them at least every other month and just talk to them about where I'm at in my life, what's going on, just to find that balance where not only, I wouldn't say bring me back down, but make me see maybe sometimes the bigger picture, because I may get lost or even get a little emotional with certain situations that I have to deal with.
I think it's really wonderful. And what it goes to show you, and I think it underscores, is that we're never done learning, right? You know, somebody who has had as much experience, you know, as you, you know, we could say, you know, you've had the 10,000 hours, you're an expert, you continue to learn. And I think that's really wonderful. And speaking of learning, you know, what advice would you give to people who either aspire to serve in elected office or you know, who aspire to serve in the criminal justice system?
I think the preparation, prepared for, talk to as many people that's in that particular industry so that you're prepared, because it is very challenging, as you know, just to run for office. So now next year, you know, I think I've done a pretty good job for 4 years, but now you actually have to campaign and convince people who may not have known you or disagree with you that you're the right person to continue for another 4 years or for another term. And that's the difficult thing, because you've done the best job you can for 4 years, and now you have to go out and convince people that you did a good job for 4 years. And so it's not like you get an A at the end of your 4 years and you can continue. You know, it's like you got to apply to school all over again, and you have to get busy. So I do think of, you know, surround yourself with good, competent people that you trust to get you where you want to be. Think about that end goal, and don't think about that one. Once you get to that level, what is the next level you want to get to after you feel like you may have accomplished everything you can in that particular role?
I think it's really cool. And something I think that's cool is I consider you probably the busiest man on the face of the earth. And obviously COVID, you know, has changed things, because I'm sure you're a little more sedentary, but you know, pre-COVID, you know, because people always say, what does a sheriff do? Like, what did a day in the life of Sheriff Toulon look like?
You know, so I'm usually in the office by 8 o'clock, and first thing I do is review my statistics. How many inmates, you know, how many people out sick, the ethnicity of the inmates, how many are gang related. You know, that's very important to me to know who's in my custody. Did we get any new admission inmates? You know, anybody that's any notoriety, it may have been on News 12 or Newsday for that particular day. You know, do we have to keep them separated? And then unfortunately, even though we're dealing with COVID, my schedule is pretty packed until almost right after Thanksgiving. And so, you know, I'm still meeting virtually. I do hold meetings in my office. You know, of course, we're all socially distanced. There are many ways that we want to try and improve our office as we move towards the new year and what we want to do in 2021. And so, you know, continually meeting with the staff. You know, we're looking at what's going to happen, in 2 weeks, you know, election day. Are we going to have social unrest around our area, or what type of challenges could we face regarding which candidate wins the election. You know, and so, you know, and then of course, still dealing with COVID, where many things like the New York Philharmonic and also Broadway are closed until 2021, and all of us trying to figure out, you know, how long are we going to have to live like this? We continue to wear masks and social distancing. So, you know, we're still preparing. And that, and the last thing, you know, with bail reform, with the new amendment to the legislation from in April, you know, we're starting to see a little uptick in our inmate population. And so now we're starting to see an increase of individuals who are being remanded to the custody of the sheriff's office.
And once again, you know, you were always anticipating issues before they come to you. And I think there's so many takeaways from our conversation today, but that's one of the main takeaways I always take from you is how can I best anticipate problems down the road and act today to solve them? And at least been my last question, we ask every guest on the show this question. So if you want to take a minute to think about it, that's fine. But, you know, you've learned so much over the course of your incredible career. What would be the biggest piece of advice that you would give to your younger self? So Sheriff Toulon speaking to, you know, regular Errol back in the day, you know, what would the biggest piece of advice you'd have for young Errol be?
I think it's probably what I said earlier. You know, you're going to really have to overcome some hurdles, some tragedies in your life, some illnesses. But no matter what, you can't lose faith in yourself. You know, you can't say, you know what, I can't do it. You know, you can do it. You may not be able to do it as quickly as you want to do it, but you can definitely do anything you put your mind to it. Now, I'm not telling a 40-year-old you're going to be a professional hockey player, nor am I going to tell a 40-year-old you're going to be an MMA fighter. You know, but what I am saying is that, you know, within reason, within different skill training, whether it's technical or through traditional academic institutions, or just applying yourself to, if you're in law enforcement, to become a sergeant, a lieutenant, or a captain, and not remain within the, you know, the lower ranks in that particular organization, or look in any organization, whether it's Amazon or the local businesses that you may work for, you know, strive to be the best employee, you know, regardless of what you do, never look down on what you do, and, you know, just try and work within yourself and not try to compare yourself to others, because the worst thing we do, especially these young kids on social media, you know, they think that they're supposed to look a certain way, they're supposed to be a certain way, they're supposed to have certain clothing, certain cars. And if you don't have the financial means, just live within your means and eventually you'll get to where you want to be.
I love that. I think it's the perfect place to wrap and to, as my mom says, and I know, you know, you've heard my mom say this, you know, just to stay in your own lane. I think it's really wonderful. Sheriff, you, first of all, thank you so much for being on the show, but you really, not only are you an incredible guy, and I cherish you as both a friend and a role model. And from all of us here at Java with Josh, we look forward to watching you continue to make us proud as Suffolk County Sheriff. Sheriff Toulon, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. If anybody ever needs anything, please feel free to call us.
Thanks so much for tuning in. And thank you to Sheriff Toulon for an amazing conversation. Make sure to click subscribe to our podcast and check us out on Instagram and Facebook for videos and bonus features. I'd also love to hear your questions and comments. Feel free to shoot me an email at josh@joshlafazan.com. I'm legislator Josh Lafazan, and thanks for joining us for Java with Josh.